We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Shut up!
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Fellas, I gotta make a couple here. On Saturday in Tuscaloosa, I got as lost as I have probably ever been at a facility, at a stadium for an event I was covering. I was at the Alabama game for Alabama, Texas. Typically, you get your credential. There's a designated media entrance, which there was. It was just, I just didn't find it. I was pointed, directed just kind of like into an elevator by a very helpful, friendly security guard and sent up an elevator. So I get out of this elevator and I'm like in the like back room of some, or like back hallway of some like catering. You know, catering setup, some catering kitchen, obviously in the wrong place. I ask, hey, where's the press box, or can I get to the media level? Should I have just gone down back the way I came to the ground floor? Certainly. Did I? No. The guy,
it takes a long time.
The guy tells me, go back down to floor five. It's on the fifth level. I was like, okay, cool. Go down to fifth floor. It's not at the fifth floor. And what begins is, I'm serious, I took at least a lap, probably multiple laps, around the entirety, the circumference of Bryant-Denny Stadium on a couple levels. One of those levels was the suite level.
Uh-huh.
Fellas, when I tell you it hits different if you got money at Bama, let me tell y'all, it hits different. Because, and I'm serious, I was not, like, I on accident ended up, this is about 90 minutes before the game, I ended up in what's called the founders level, I came to note. I took
Were you on the right side of the stadium?
No, hell no.
Oh, they sent you up at the wrong elevator, on the wrong side.
Wrong elevator, wrong side. By the time I got to the press box at a later date, I realized that you've been to Tuscaloosa, Godfrey, the founder's suites are actually where the old press box was.
Yeah.
They redid that part, which used to be a nice open air, and they moved it, kicked it to the other side of the stadium. I've been to Bryant-Denny before, but I hadn't been since college. It's been like 10 years. So I end up in this founder's level suite thing. This is the most insane. Like, I took a couple of pictures. We'll put it up on social media if this gets on social or whatever. This is the most insane thing I've ever seen in a stadium. I mean, this like giant, like plush carpet, chandeliers, nice like wood mahogany bar, like the suites themselves, like couches, beautiful. Apparently they're like
five. Take your shoes off. Take your shoes off on carpet.
100%.
Like you won't feel it.
Yeah. Like I am not supposed to be in this thing. And the guy was very nice and said, sir,
hey, walk up and ask for a credit score.
Yeah, sir, you lost. Yes. Anyway, he was very nice. And he also pointed me the wrong way. Nobody in this place knew where the press box was. But I'm telling you, the founder's suites at Bryant-Denny Stadium hit extremely different.
What if this was all viral marketing on their part, where they're like, we're going to send the Sports Illustrated reporter, you're on the wrong side of the stadium, we're sending you the wrong elevator, and this was like an Inception bit. They were just like, we would like to market how nice our luxury suites are, so let's send the SI reporter in there and let him, you know, get a little taste, get a little minute of it. My first memory of this is actually at Ben Hill Griffin.
Oh.
Because it was the first press box I remember as a young Buck reporter, where they did the smart thing, which Alex alluded to, which is they're like, we all hate the media, so why are we giving them good seats at the 50 in this like prime viewing space? So what Florida did was they kicked everybody to a corner end zone, right? And then that space became the, I believe it's called the Bull Gator Club. And the Bull Gator Club was like the luxury seating. That was the thing. It was like, one, it's Florida and it was air conditioned and you're behind plexiglass, which some people like, some people don't. You want the energy of the crowd.
Well, what's nice.
And then you're
What's nice at Tuscaloosa is a lot of these press boxes are now glassed in, especially in the NFL stadiums. But at Bryant-Denny, they have like a little window kind of like notch that they sort of like kick open so so you can hear everything, which is nice.
It's called a transom.
Yes. Awesome. I don't own a house and never will.
The the what are our, real fast, as if anyone gives a shit, what are our feelings on the press box windowing? Do we want to open? We want to feel it, or is it sometimes a pain in the ass on weather? Okay, it just is.
I just want to be able to hear it. I want to be able to hear the atmosphere. Yeah. That like feeling like you're like glassed in, it sucks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is how it is. You know, like, yeah.
The weird thing happened to me in my career where finally, like in my early 40s, I started working for a masthead that people recognized for the first time. And so I get better seats when I actually go to a game. The problem is in the press box, I don't want a better seat anymore because I'm 6'5 and I'm old and I hate people. I want to sit way off in the corner and be able to sort of quietly view the game and have my own space. But now they jam you in with all those, like, you know, everybody, they like, oh, we want to give the Washington Post a good seat. So it's ironical because I've even at Vanderbilt, sometimes I just call them. I'm just like, hey, can I come to a game? I'm down the street. What are y'all doing? And I'll just go up there, watch the Vanderbilt game, work on my computer on something else. But in general, I'm kind of anti press box now, Richard. I don't know about you.
Well,
would you stand on the sideline all game if you could?
No, because it actually I can't see shit, man. Like you can't, really? Like you can't move. I mean, if I could maybe get all the way from sideline to sideline, maybe.
Yeah.
But like you can't often get to the other sideline because you have to cross the team box.
And Let me clarify. Your boy here was accidentally bragging. 4 or maybe 5 times in my career, I've had team field passes, meaning I can stand wherever I want. I can stand next to the OC. Mm. Did it at the SHU, Ohio State Cincinnati, did it Army Navy, did it Baylor ULM one year. It's the best. That's what I recommend. I know you can't get it, but like is when you're actually on the field with the team, it's a completely different viewing experience. And the speed at which things unfold, you process and then call things in, or it's people haven't, you just don't know, dude. It's a live car wreck.
It's hard to like pay attention. Like it's hard to see.
Yeah.
Cause you're used to obviously seeing on TV. It's hard to like follow the game because things just like hit so quick. I don't know how friend of the show, Cole Kublik, is able to do that and have cogent analysis on the game, like standing in an end zone. It's crazy.
And carry out a conspiracy against Ole Miss. The guy can multitask. Alex Kirshner, if you were a defensive coordinator, would you be a Joe Lee Dunn? And you're like, I don't even want the headset. I'm going to be on the field. I can see everything I need to. I want to feel it. Or would you be more analytical and be up in the box where you want the A11? You want the whole
If I were a coach, I would sit upstairs so I could actually see what was happening. Yeah.
I feel like that fits your personality. Richard, would you be in the booth or would you be hollering
on the field? You can't.
I would absolutely be on the field though, because you got to be able to talk. Like, you got to be able to talk to your guys.
I'd be on the field. Yeah. I'd be on the field with Alex upstairs because Alex would be calm and rational the entire time and like observing things. And I'd be like, Alex, just hang on a second.
I have GAs.
I do this all the time.
I have GAs to chart shit. You think I'm sitting there charting personnel?
Yeah.
On the game.
You just stay dry though. You don't get rained on.
That's true.
The game that Richard was at on Saturday, we did a little postmortem on Sunday in the split zone duo. Hurry up. But we had a few more days to chew on it. We're talking about two things. One, how good things could get for the Texas Longhorns. And two, how bad things could get for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Everyone knows. Let's start with Alabama. Everyone knows that Alabama has taken regular season losses before. There are even some years where they take two. I think there was a year when they took 3. A couple seasons ago.
Allegedly.
But, so, you know, there have been many a time when people have predicted that the spiral is coming for Nick Saban's Alabama, and it's never been true. But this time it might be true. Kind of feels like it might be true. Richard, how bad could it get?
I don't think it spirals. I don't think spiral is the term.
Will you just read your show notes to everybody right now? Because when I opened it, I laughed out loud.
Sorry, I'm not looking.
Please. He just wrote. Exactly. Now I have to do it like a performance reading. Oh. it under his bullet point, he just wrote Citrus Bowl defense good. I want that. we got hollered home field real fast because that might be the T-shirt of the year right there. Citrus Bowl defense good.
I think that Alabama, look, it's pretty clear they have a quarterback situation that they need to work around. He is deficient when it comes to lock, stock, and barrel dropback passing. I think that, to Texas's credit, Texas got him. It wasn't even a situation where they asked him to be Tom Brady, right? That's not what happened. Right. They were crushing pockets. They were asking him to be a dropback passer at points in that game, or forced him to be a dropback passer at points in that game in which he was under significant duress. Like, that's the problem. And so I think that that's on Texas's credit, or to Texas's credit. You know, I think that, look, the two picks were horrific. I mean, there's no way to really, the interceptions were rough. Those were rough balls. Those were rough decisions to make. And so, but then again, if they get to a spot where they start design QB run game, I mean, he's absolutely electric with the ball in his hands. There's no two ways about that.
All right. So here's my question. I can't believe I'm asking, but I have watched the game. So if you don't have the size and physicality of Texas's defense in the SEC coming up, the opponents they're about to see, yeah, there's a blueprint, but not everyone has Texas's quality defense. Again, these are words that I'm putting together in a factual sentence. Richard, is it a situation, quarterback O-line specific, that you have to pressure him, or are you going to see, like, he was forced to be a dropback passer and he failed essentially, but that was also because he was forced to be a dropback passer under pressure.
Yes. Right.
So do you have to reduce him to that in order to have that success?
I mean, probably,
or is he just, or is the guy just not it and you can do other things to confuse him?
Well, look, he was dropback passer against Middle Tennessee and it went pretty well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
It's,
I'm thinking more of the Tennessee, or like they have Ole Miss in 2 weeks. Like,
here's the other thing. And because you mentioned Tennessee, I think Tennessee is a really good example. That's a game where it'll be a shootout, you would imagine. You would think that then that brings in the opportunity to, he's going to have to keep pace. They're going to have to keep pace. And I do think, like, I think Alabama's defense is really good. Like, I up front, they are really good. Texas did not run the ball really for shit on Saturday. And again, as we talked about on the hurry up, until the very end of the game, when I think, to Texas's credit, and we will get to Texas in a second, to Texas's credit, they ran the ball when 100,000 people in that stadium knew they were going to run the ball. That is something. That is something. For Texas.
It's very Bama-ish.
So, you know, what is Alabama going to... The problems with Alabama, I think, remain. I was a little confused on Saturday about... Like, they ran all this 12 personnel, which are two tight end sets, against Middle Tennessee. And I know why. You can overpower Middle Tennessee and be fine. Okay. But they didn't do that against Texas. Really? Okay. And it was something that I thought we were going to see as a rejuvenation or a rejiggering of this offense, or a tweaking of this offense. I don't know whether they respected Texas front thusly, or if it's something that they were just showing in a Middle Tennessee game to put it on film to send Texas's coaches on a wild goose chase. I don't know.
Right. Okay. I can't believe I'm going to ask this one too, but was Texas not, oh God, this is so weird to say, was their defense not tested enough to create enough of a data point to say they're going to be fine through conference play?
Was Texas's defense, or was Alabama's defense?
No, I'm sorry. Was Texas not tested enough by the Alabama defense?
Oh no, because I think that like I said, Texas was not really able to run the ball. Like, and Alex made the really good point, brought this up on Sunday's show. What Texas showed in that game was Sark's not necessarily going to beat his head against the wall with something that's not working. They're going to find a way to skin the cat. And they basically said, okay, well, the screen game's now an extension of the run game. That's how we get three or four cheap yards on first down. That's how we get drives moving. That's how we stay ahead of the chains. I don't have the box score in front of me right now, but like, I do know that Texas was really good on first down They did not like take a lot of losses. They did not get behind the chains. They kept things moving. And I think that was really important for them. But like they just didn't beat their head against the wall in the run game. They said, all right, we'll just go horizontally. We'll figure out a way.
We're a little early for weighted stuff like SP plus, because we don't have enough. I mean, data like Bill, I think Bill usually kind of kicks it in like October 1st.
Yeah. The off season stuff hasn't filtered out yet.
But playing the schedule game, which is my favorite pastime on the show, I don't see anybody complete enough to make Sark make more than one move like Alabama did. Right. So if they're making an adjustment off of something that's not working in Tuscaloosa and still having as much success as they did, especially when you're talking about, we'll fold out the run into a screen game, but we still have Quinn to go deep, right? We still have a major threat, a major component, a major effective component of this offense. I don't see a team on this schedule. I mean, Dave Aranda is creative, but it's a personnel game, right? Like, I don't think that there's, I mean, Baylor could do something fun, but guys, this is, I'm struggling to form a cohesive thought here, but like no one's going to challenge Texas as well as Alabama did, and it still didn't work.
In terms of
making the offense uncomfortable.
The other thing to note here is that if their defense is actually going to be this good, if their defense is actually going to be this effective, you run into a spot where, to an extent, you're playing a version of complimentary football in that right. defense and that defensive front can take wax at you, right? That defense and that defensive front can hold you at bay, because eventually Sark is going to figure you out. Eventually Sark as a play caller is going to find it.
Yeah. And it kind of, I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but it kind of allows this defense to be bold and to be a little risky and aggressive when you have this much confidence in your offense to adjust. And you can start slow and feel very good about things.
And I will say that with Texas, like what I thought was the best part about Texas is up front, particularly with those defensive tackles. I do think they can be got at a little bit down the field and with secondary. Obviously Alabama did it. Like Alabama busted a couple chunk plays. We're saying all this stuff about Jalen Milroe. It's not like they threw for 110 yards. Like they hit some big plays over the top, obviously, and threw a couple punches there. But I thought it against Rice, and I thought against Alabama, Texas's defensive linemen, particularly in the middle there, but what Byron Murphy and the gang can do there, pretty good, man. Pretty good.
Bo Davis was right. I mean, Bo Davis was right. It was a caustic moment. I mean, look, it was a caustic moment, and I think it's sort of like an uncomfortable look into the processing plant floor on how the sausage gets made. But like, this was a full proof of concept on a Bamification, both in terms of like personnel, but also I thought like aggression and discipline and. Look, I'm not going to jump as far as a Georgia comp yet or anything close to that, but like for Texas, if you're grading on the Texas curve of what we've seen out of this program for just through the Tom Herman era, right? This was very different in a positive way. This was very un-Texas. This was, as someone who does the anonymous thing every single cycle, every single year, Texas is soft. Texas thinks they're superstars. It's a meme. It's a trope. I think I edited it out one year because I'm like, well, I wrote this last year. Like, I knew the guy said it again, but like, you know, this is a soft team. This is a 5-star team. And they read press clippings, like all that shit. That was not that team on Saturday.
Yeah.
I will throw one thing out, and this is not to be a harbinger of anything, Alex. Their best data point is going to be Alabama in terms of playoff consideration. They need to not trip up. That's the only problem down the stretch.
Yeah,
because the Big 12 right now does not look like it's going to be a 5-6 ranked team.
Someone's going to beat them, probably.
Conference, sorry.
Give it, like, you know, that. I think Alex's point is well taken. Like, give it some time. Like,
Looking at it all wrong, Stephen. It's not that there's another team in the Big 12 that stacks up to them talent-wise. We said that in the Big 12 season preview. Like, Texas should win this league. I think they're going to. At this point, I'd take them over the field.
Yes.
But they're going to lose a game because the Big 12 does not have weeks off. There is no Northwestern for them to play. I'm serious. Like, the Big 12, it is hard.
He killed me.
It is hard. And this was the Big 12 strength last year as well.
Wait, are you being serious?
I'm completely serious.
I tend to agree with him.
Look, I mean, there's a lot of 70-30 games for Texas. And you play play enough of those, the math says you will lose one.
It's a bit, but like, Texas could lose to Kansas. I'm not even being funny.
No.
Like,
Kansas is on the high end of what's left on this resume. Kansas is on the high end. And but I'm talking about, like, this isn't the roster that goes and this isn't the roster. This isn't the organization that loses at Iowa State, right? This used to be, or the one that shits the bed at home against K-State.
I mean, I think Texas is, and I think everyone thinks that Texas is a serious playoff contender at this point, but I don't think they're going 13-0. I just don't see it happening. Too many decent to good teams in the Big 12 that can have a day against you. And I'm not even going to play the schedule game, but that's the other thing about Texas is that Richard's point is well taken about the front and Byron Murphy and the guys being really serious. The Texas secondary is a little
be got at.
Yeah,
I will concede that point.
Like this is not like the Legion of Boom back there for Texas. Like
This ain't Earl Thomas in 2005.
No, and it's not Michael Huff. It's like, and the safety play was actually, I think, the biggest question. Like, there were multiple Alabama touchdowns in this game where people were pointing out the Skycam footage of basically what Jalen Milroe saw at one point in the play. And it was like, this became a touchdown. How did that happen?
Yeah.
I think the Texas secondary is iffy. But look, it's a great team.
I'm just hung up, Alex, on the idea that with the defensive front being as good and effective as we've seen so far against Big 12 O-lines. Now, look, it's all about release. Like, I've learned that from Scheme Twitter. It's all about, like, we'll get around that. If they want to pressure us in the middle, we can get around that. We'll screen them. We'll do this. We'll do that. But I don't know. I'm just down on this iteration of the league right now, but they look more SEC than I thought they would in a year that I thought they would look better. So that's a compliment. And it's weird for me to compliment teams, but yet here we are.
Let's
talk about A&M.
Now, this must be tough for you, Stephen, to be so crazy of the University of Texas at Austin. But I think right now they are in a good position. Richard, Citrus Bowl, Alabama, I don't know. But I do think this will be
the Citrus Bowl, defense, good.
I do think this will be the first year in a while where we don't see Alabama touch a number one ranking at any point in the year. I don't think this is that kind of team. And I am already annoyed at, like, I don't know, 2 weeks from now, they're going to win some game. They'll beat Ole Miss by a lot of points. And Saban will give like a really chesty, indignant post-game interview. And everyone will be like, y'all pissed him off. As if other teams get mad. I'm getting tired of that. I'm getting very tired of that.
That was already happening before the season started with the, like, smiling stuff. Like, oh, he's smiling a lot. They must be really good.
Watch out.
Every other team has no emotions. They're not. And like when someone sees Nick Saban smile, they just think, ah, shit. Like, we're gonna abandon our game plan and we're gonna have 15 false starts in this game.
What I do think is legitimate, though, as far as kind of in that family of stuff, is I do think he likes a team like this more than he likes
2012,
whatever their best teams have been.
He likes a relative fixer upper
more than a team that reads its own press clippings and is absolutely going to go 13-0.
Alabama has to do so much work to maintain a culture like what chafes you, Alex, and it chafes me too, is that, like, nobody respected all that bullshit. They have to build so much false narrative to keep those guys focused in their opinion. He loves a loss. He loves coaching after a loss. He loves the Monday after a loss. I've heard that for years.
Watch his press conference. Watch his press conference Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
His loss press conferences are very interesting.
He's going to fucking brutalize USF. And they will be, like, they're going to beat Ole Miss now. For sure. The idea of this being a toss-up game, that's a joke to me.
I mean, probably.
And then they're going to lose to LSU. They're going to lose to LSU in back-to-back seasons to the same LSU that lost to Florida State in back-to-back seasons. And I'm going to have to explain all of that to my in-laws for every holiday for the next calendar year.
That's Alabama. That's Texas. One program feeling very good. One feeling very bad. It's also a great week for Texas because the University of Oklahoma is in administrative freefall. Maybe that's too strong.
That's a little strong.
It's a little strong.
Let me
edit that. Well,
the administration's not in free fall. No, you don't have to edit it.
I mean metaphoric. I'm not going to have our producer, Anthony DeVito, come in and take it out. They're not an administrative free fall.
No.
But I have questions about Oklahoma. Yeah. I think everyone has questions about Oklahoma.
Let me fix your prequel there. The administration is not in free fall. They did jump from the top rope onto one of their employees on Monday. They did do that, and probably Sunday. Actually, it was probably Sunday.
It was Saturday night. It was immediate.
They pushed a large ton of bricks onto an employee in free fall. There was a offensive coordinator who made maybe not free fall for his entire career, but one of the more notable unforced errors in press moments in the last couple of years.
All right.
Sorry, I'm fixing it for you. I'm trying.
The very, very quick summary, because we record the show on Wednesday morning and you've most likely already seen this. After Oklahoma beats SMU, families come down on the field. Jeff Lebby is Oklahoma's offensive coordinator, former Baylor assistant Jeff Lebby, current son-in-law of Art Briles, Jeff Lebby. And Briles in Oklahoma gear, Art Briles, the most disgraced coach in the country who is still living, is down on the field in Oklahoma gear. A lot of people notice this. Embarrassing.
Sandusky's not dead.
Not the thing you want to see. Good point. Sandusky is not dead. He's just in prison. I'm going to get myself out of this comparison game before I get myself into huge trouble. But anyway, it becomes very unpopular that Art Briles is on the field there. Even Oklahoma fans are not a fan of Art Briles. I think en masse because A, Art Briles, and B, like, nobody is inclined to be like, oh, our Big 12 rival of old. We love that guy who then got himself caught up in a heinous rape scandal. So a lot of heat on Oklahoma here. And I think what is interesting is that Jeff Lebby in his press conference after the game, again, extremely defensive about it. You know, that's the father of my two children. Nothing resembling an apology or I shouldn't have done that. I don't think that people are mad in principle that, like, he has a relationship with his father-in-law, but apparently he was told, Jeff Lebby was told, Oklahoma said this almost explicitly, that OU had told Lebby, you can't bring this guy around. And he brings him around. Joe Castiglione, the AD, says it was my expectation that this wouldn't happen based on conversations with the involved staff. Brent Venables said,
based on conversations with the involved staff. Is that the direct quote? I don't know if
it's close. It's a slight paraphrase. Okay. Brent Venables said it's being dealt with. It is very clear that Oklahoma's athletic director and or head coach made Jeff Lebby see God or something. Because the next day, Jeff Lebby's like, I'm sorry, it became a distraction. Obviously,
took a walk with Jesus.
He didn't apologize.
They took a long walk with Jesus.
So Alex, I have it. I found it. I have it up. This is Joe Castiglione's Saturday night statement, if you haven't seen it. I was just as disappointed as many of our fans when I learned of the post-game situation tonight. It shouldn't have happened, and it was my expectation it never would. Based on boundaries we previously set.
Do you know what
I've
that
addressed
means?
It. I've addressed it with the appropriate staff.
Let's talk about what that means. So Jeff Lebby was on the Baylor staff that oversaw the program in the darkest depths of this rape scandal in Waco. Not only was he on that staff, but he is in at least one lawsuit specifically implicated as having been told of sexual misconduct by a player and not doing enough to deal with it. Jeff Lebby also was a major Art Briles vocal supporter after he was fired. He was involved with
apologist
is the word. He was involved with CAB Coach Art Briles t-shirts. Obviously, much of the Baylor staff basically put Art Briles' initials on their like fingers or knuckles in the game after he was fired. It was the
version of the whatever Fitzgerald t-shirts that we talked about the other day.
So Jeff Lebby should be thanking his lucky stars that he's allowed to work in higher education on a college campus. Period. In my opinion, he shouldn't be. And we can talk about why.
So he can get paid millions of dollars to only score 28 points against SMU.
Yes.
I just want to
He should thank like, whatever
my God
his God
chose
is,
that week to do it.
He should be so grateful that he is allowed to be here. And it's pretty clear that Oklahoma, when they were making the moral compromise to keep this guy around, to bring this guy into the building because they thought he could be the best thing they had since Lincoln Riley left him on offense, and they were trying to reshuffle, pretty clear that Oklahoma said, hey, man, we're okay with your Baylor history because we need to score points, but you can't bring that fucking guy around. I don't care if he's your father-in-law. That's clearly what they told him. And the fact that he did, and then the next day, he changed his Instagram picture to be a picture with Art on the field in Oklahoma gear before a day after that, taking that down and giving the press conference where he says, he reads from a statement that he definitely didn't write and says, it's a distraction. And for that, I apologize. Like, man, this is a little insubordinate. It's pretty damn insubordinate. And I'm thinking about how, like, when Brent Venables took this job a couple of years ago, his whole thing was alignment, alignment, alignment. He basically talked shit about Auburn from the podium when he took the job, because he was like, I've had opportunities at places. He was pretty clearly winking and nodding to Auburn where, you know, the alignment on campus just didn't feel right. And this is a little different because it's not a fight between Venables and his AD and president, but the alignment guy, who also, by the way, had to fire Cale Gundy on a, what I'll euphemistically call an off-field pretense before his first season even started, now has his OC basically like sticking up his middle finger at his bosses so that he can have Art Briles down on the field. I mean, it makes you wonder a bit about like what is happening in Norman. It doesn't seem good.
It's not down.
Oh, the picture is still up.
The Instagram profile.
Excuse me. The Instagram picture is still up. Yes, and that's a change, up, according to the Oklahoma Student newspaper. It was not previously, I will say this, that picture. A
couple things here.
I'm pretty sure it was shot that weekend.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like that. It was before. It's before the game because he's in a suit. Like, sure. It's pretty obvious.
A couple things here. One, it's funny. I talked, the one funny thing about this is I talked to somebody who, and I quote, said, you should have just put Art in a Johnny O polo shirt. Like, that it was really the fact that he's wearing the logo that really, really set the whole thing off beyond the fact that he was just physically there.
They were rivals. I don't think people understand, like they were rivals.
I will
Oklahoma
say
and Baylor.
I will say this. I know for a fact that at a previous place that Kendall Briles has worked, it was made very clear to him he can or cannot come around. And there was not a problem. I know for a fact at other places Kendall Briles has worked, it actually hadn't been a problem.
And that's his son.
My question is, what is kind of the difference here? Like, why here? Like, why, what?
Because he doesn't think that his father-in-law did anything wrong.
Well,
that's,
yeah,
why.
But that's, I don't think Kendall does either.
No, but Kendall's savvy enough.
He has the good sense to have, shut the fuck up.
Like, yeah, Kendall, look, I pitched this to Alex. I don't know if we're going to do it, but I think we should. And maybe we'll find a sponsor for it. And if we find a sponsor for it, it'd be the bravest business in fucking, yeah, in God's America. So problematic coordinator rankings, as in like, what are you actually getting for your problematic coordinator? Just a quick week in review. You got Kendall Briles, right? Who is probably your best buy right now at TCU compared to Jeff Lebby, who only scored 28 against SMU, right? That's the other thing too, is like, OU fans weren't happy with the fucker to begin with. All right. Then over in College Station, we got Alex's favorite assistant coach that isn't named Ference, DJ Durkin.
Oh, to be clear, like, DJ Durkin is a million miles below any Ference in terms of, I mean, well, again, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I mean, just on this ranking, I'm talking about who you always bring up and stuff. So, like, right now, I would probably put Lebby. Actually, after the podium shit and the whole, like, bravado, like, I'm an extra on The Sopranos, and he does, like, that's my father-in-law. This slow, fucking menacing shit. By the way, I don't know anybody in the Oklahoma press corps. I don't know anybody. They were so diplomatic about that. And you could hear the interchange when he repeats it. Like, he's being it's all bully. It's all bully. It's all, I'm going to repeat what I said. I'm going to be slow and menacing about it. I kind of wish I was a beat writer again at one of these places, because one of these reporters should just, and like, they have full, this is not breaking the code of ethics or anything like that. Just be like, dude, it's Art Briles. You are supposed to reflect your readership. You are supposed to platform your readers in that moment and give them access to it. Like,
whoever was answering the follow-up question.
He was like, he said, Jeff, because I transcribed it for my column in the Post. It was like, Jeff, you know, some people might have a problem with that. And then he just goes, well, that's my father-in-law. I'd have fucking come right back on the top of it and say, why does that matter?
Yeah, the issue isn't...
There's a million questions. They should have pushed back on him.
So this is the thing. But I mean, I understand that when a guy like Lebby, like, acts in such a menacing way from the podium where there's kind of a power mismatch that you might be a little flustered.
What's he going to do? Take a swing?
I'm just saying how questioning works. I understand what it's like. But I think here's the... Remember, it's the moment. It might be a little bit surprised that he responded that way. And he's moving on. But anyway, I think that it is worth noting that nobody cares. I shouldn't say nobody cares, but the problem wasn't, you maintained a relationship with your father-in-law despite his deep, 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 deep flaws and wrongdoing. Like, that ain't it. It's you brought him around when you were told not to do that and gave him the shine of being on the field in Oklahoma gear and being sort of back part of your college football family when you were told you couldn't do that. I think even the worst people need people. It's not that.
And also, you pretty clearly embarrassed the head man. Because Brent Venables clearly had no idea. Pretty clear. Because if he did, he wouldn't have answered the question the way he answered the question. Like, the way he answered the question, go watch the video. But
Godfrey,
in redneck terms, on either Saturday night or Sunday, like Alex and I have texted about this, like, my boy toted an ass whooping. Either Venables or Joe or both, brought him into a room and fucking brought him to grief, as they say in England. Like, it must have been bad, because the Lebby that gets up on the podium is obviously recalcitrant.
On Monday.
Yeah. Because I was writing the column. I had to redo the lead. Yeah. So, yeah, Monday. But he's very much a new man in understanding I have severely fucked up. I also guarantee you his reps have talked to him about this.
Well, to Richard, be clear,
I guarantee he thinks he fucked up his representation. Oh, no, he doesn't. He still thinks his father-in-law's a martyr.
Right.
Absolutely. Like, oh, yeah. He still believes all that
work
bullshit.
In college sports. Like,
no,
we're still
not.
Be better
he's,
off
he's not. Gonna, he's not going to ever change on that ever. But I think he understood how bad he fucked his career up, because one of the things that I'll stick in here before we move on, because this was going to be a short segment, and I didn't even include this in my piece. This guy was rumored for jobs. Like, if Lane goes to Auburn, Jeff Lebby was well liked by administrators in Oxford. Jeff Lebby, according to Jeff Lebby sources, was the guy when Lane was off being Lane, or Lane wasn't reachable, or Lane's being, you know, idiosyncratic, let's call it, that Jeff Lebby was really doing the work around there. Jeff Lebby has built himself a very nice amount of buzz as a future head coach. But if you're sitting there watching this shit on Saturday as an administrator or a university president, watching a guy absolutely shoot himself in the foot out of nowhere because of his father-in-law, bringing all this shit into Norman, Oklahoma had nothing to do with the Baylor scandal. They fucking hate Baylor almost as much as Texas does. And you're sitting there going, I'm going to hire this guy. That's the decision-making matrix that I'm going to hire for the highest profile position in my university. He fucked his career up. He doesn't realize it yet. And I'm sure he will find a way to blame us in the media specifically for doing so. But my guy cut his whole fucking nose off on Saturday night.
Richard, on the Oklahoma part of this, tell me if I'm making too much of it with my thought about what is happening in that building. If you're not on the same page about this, are there other things you're not on the same page about? Like, would you worry? Like, I think we've laid out the moral stakes of it to some extent. It's pretty clear, as Godfrey says, what this will do to Lebby's career prospects. But what do you think it says about what is happening in that building and how that plays out for Oklahoma football?
Okay. The one thing that I do, the one thing that I do think is a legitimate pain point, whatever you want to call it, is the fact that, you know, the insubordination, the fact that I think he embarrassed Brent Venables here, the fact that I am kind of looking at a couple of these things that have now happened. You mentioned the Cale Gundy thing, a couple of things that have happened as far as Brent is concerned, and looking at this being like, is Brent built for this as like the like CEO coach you need to be to kind of keep such things kind of under wraps, you know, whatever. That's one thing. But like, look, man, if they end up starting Jackson Arnold and Jackson Arnold's the truth, I don't really think it matters as far as like what, you know, staff coach, whatever you want to say. Like, it, I think Oklahoma's problem on the field as presently constituted is they may not have the right quarterback playing.
Yes.
We will see.
I don't know if, I don't know if he might not be built for this. Richard might be totally right. And I'm leaning in that direction tentatively. But I do know that you take a guy who was at, was in the SEC as a successful offensive coordinator. And according to the athletic director, Alex, they said, hey, we know who your father-in-law is. Please don't make this. Like, we're telling you now not to do this. I think, I don't know if I, look, Venables is the one who has to take it in the teeth. And that sucks. And they don't have enough equity, this coaching staff, based on what they did and didn't do last year and how they lost Red River and all this stuff. It's hard to blame Venables. I mean, well, I guess you could say you should never hire him.
He hired him.
You're right. You hired him in the first place. I get that. There are things that I think will happen on the field in the coming weeks that will determine Venables' fate far more than this. However, this is an anchor. It's definitely an unnecessary loss that he's taking. I personally have a tough time with it. Although I guess I'm wrong because he hired him. And again, it's like that. It's the joke about the rankings that we have. Like, what are you getting for your problematic coordinator? Like, what are you getting for? I talked to someone who knows way more football than I do, schematically, way more than any of us on the show do. And he started the conversation with, I don't understand the mystique of DJ Durkin. And then I turned that into, well, can you explain the mystique of Kendall and Jeff to me? And I don't get it. You can, I said this before about Art. You can go, if you want Baylor's offense in 2023, there's like 50 fucking guys you can hire.
USF basically just did it. Like, USF was like, all right, cool, Golish, hey.
Something that I think is interesting.
Go get the Russian.
I'll be quick because I don't think it applies to Levy. I think Oklahoma hired Levy because they thought, and he is a good offensive coach if you can strip out everything else. They thought, all right, this guy will help us score points. I think there are cases. Yeah. I think that when Maryland tried to bring back DJ Durkin after the very damning report about his program culture, I think when certain Northwestern influential people were calling for Pat Fitzgerald and media people were calling for Pat Fitzgerald to keep his job a few weeks ago, I think this was another case of it. I think there are times when people want to have a coach in a job or a coach avoid consequences to make a culture war point. Like, Maryland sucked. They weren't good under DJ Durkin. It wasn't that he was the only guy who could lead the program. It was that there were certain Maryland boosters who thought, ah, well, it makes us real SEC if we stick it to these crying kids by keeping this guy in here. I think that there's Northwestern fans who thought,
You might be onto something, Alex, because this would
It's culture.
This like, would explain the Muschamp
like,
thing.
Like, society is changing so fast, and if we just give in to these sensitive young people, I think that happens too. I don't think that's what happened with Oklahoma here when they hired Levy.
Thank you for the clarification. Because I was like, I don't think that's what's happening here.
It's the Will Muschamp press conference from like 4 years ago in about spring Durkin. Ball, where he just goes on. Yeah, about Durkin.
Yeah.
Where, again, unforced. The motherfucker's the head coach at South Carolina, and he's sitting here going off about his friend who's at Maryland. There was no, I don't even think there was context to bring it up. He was just angry as all hell because Durkin faced consequences, and then suddenly that was an indictment, right, as
so
Alex is saying,
like that.
On society.
Yeah.
But this is the personality type of the head coach that you pay millions of dollars to, and I'm not going to bridge this into Mel Tucker. I already did a split zone duo on Mel Tucker this week. You can go check it out on the free feed. But the reason why that one sits with me the way it does is that they preach, like, the thing they sell for millions and millions of dollars, the thing that we all pay for, we line up and say, you're worth $10 million a year, you're worth $12 million a year, whatever, is they need total agency. They need total responsibility. And when they are called to account correctly for things that they've done, they never seem to keep that same energy. They never seem to say, you know what, in the essence of, like, they all preach military stuff. They all preach like organizational stuff. And they don't really self-evaluate publicly pretty well when they are correctly assailed for doing something bad.
Well, what
and
happens
so I think
is,
that's Godfrey, the case.
What you're saying and what you're getting at, Godfrey, is, and this is very clear, whenever, the second Oklahoma loses a game, it will be Brent Venables will say the buck stops with me, can't happen, yada yada yada, it's on me, we'll get it fixed, we'll change the this, we'll change the that, we'll play the right player, yada yada, because it's easy, because the scoreboard says you won or you lost. When it comes down to things like this, that's when
it's always someone else's fault.
That's when
it's always someone else's fault.
That's when it's easy to throw context at the wall in order to muddy the waters.
When is it your fault as a head coach?
When any of your players, you know what all of your players are doing when they eat, sleep, and breathe, but yet when one of them goes out and does this, that, or the third,
but
the buck stops maybe with me. The last just nothing point. Specific, but the buck stops with me.
That's what drives me insane. And I promise we're going to get out of this, but like that's always the line, and it's always the line privately. I know, Richard, I know you've had similar experiences when they pull you aside. They want to tell you the truth off the record. They let's talk on background. By the way, I don't know who taught all these fucking coaches what on background is, but I'm going to find whoever they did who did that and strangle them because you're not using it correctly. And by the way, this is America. You don't just run up to me and go off the record. And I go, oh, damn, that's not how it works. I determine when it's off the record. Sorry, minor rant there. They always want to tell you they didn't know. They always want to tell you what they didn't know. And what happens? How many times have we seen down to the gram of protein or how many Tylenol an athlete takes what they do know about what goes on in their program? So like Urban Meyer doesn't know that like sex toys are being sent to the football office, you know, with Zach. Like there's a million of these examples. They always tuck tail and go, I didn't know. I didn't know. But bullshit, you know everything because you demand to know everything. Yes, you demand to know everything, and we pay you money to know everything, and then you demand more money in your building so you can have more information all the time. Analysts, monitoring, student advisors, all that shit, so you can keep lock on your kingdom. And then the moment you fuck up, you tell me you didn't know.
That's the situation.
Short segment.
At Oklahoma.
Short segment.
It's not good. I also do want to draw attention to what Godfrey just mentioned, that Godfrey has on this feed that you're listening to this podcast on now, a single wing episode about Mel Tucker, who has coached, I am confident, his last game at Michigan State, that we are going to see exactly how that situation resolves administratively over the next month or so.
Are we going to take bets on it? Like some betting companies did on like a 9/11 special. Are we going to be that sensitive?
Sure. Yeah, it's true. We could do the...
Did you see the Mets bomb the 9/11 special?
The Mets are part of that. The Mets did not keep up with their end of the bargain.
Go Braves.
There is a second part of that single wing that is just for Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/scd. There's a ton that we put on the Split Zone into Patreon. We think it's a great time to join. We would love to have you there for as little as $5 a month. You go to splitzoneduo.com. You can find Split Zone Duo merchandise. You can find a link to our Home Field Apparel shop through there. And speaking of Home Field Apparel, if you go to homefieldapparel.com and you use the promo code SCD20, guess what you get? 20% off your first order. What an incredible deal. Richard, Godfrey, you are both. All three of us are wearing Home Field stuff right now. Shout out to our YouTube audience who can see us. If you want this Stephen Godfrey Hates My Team shirt, get that at Home Field.
There's a discount for Ann Arbor and Oxford. There's not. Do we want to talk about the sweatshirt hostage situation? Are you still
Stephen,
upset
I'm
about
annoyed.
It, Alex?
We'll keep it quick for people, but I'm annoyed. You took my
home field
hoodie.
My boyfriend hoodied your sweatshirt, bud.
You took field hoodie at our DC live show, DC, and you never gave it back to me. And I told you to bring it to Minneapolis, and you said, no, I'm not bringing it.
No. I did. It was worse. I brought it to Minneapolis, put it on, wore it, and told her I wasn't giving it back.
Yes.
Before, like an hour before the DC live show, I was traveling before I got to DC. I did not have my like normal home wardrobe to pull from when I was packing a bag. I showed up. Josh from Homefield was there. They don't schlep merchandise there. We had QR codes, so there's nothing I could put on. Alex was like, hey, I've got an XL Homefield crew neck. And where we were, the AC was low enough in June. I was like, I'll pull this off. It's black. That's what I normally wear. And I was like, oh, this thing fits perfectly. It's already broken in. Maybe Alex won't notice. And I was like, hey, dude, I'll wash it. And then this next time I see you, I'll bring it to you. Knowing damn well, I was like, oh, this thing fits perfectly. I'm never giving it back. And then I was like being a little superstitious. It's not this home field. It's the one with the, I guess the serif font. I don't know. The curvy one, this kind of 70s looking one. Anyway, So all this happens, and then what happens, Alex? I guess I just acknowledged it that I wasn't going to give it back. I put it on for good luck because we had a great DC show, and for Minneapolis, I wanted to keep that energy.
Well, I'm annoyed, but good news is I have some home field.
You're not
home
getting
field
it back.
Stuff. I have some home field stuff, like some home field brand stuff coming to my house today. So I have found a way to work around my Stephen Godfrey problem. Thank you to Homefield. If you go to homefieldapparel.com, SCD20 for 20% off your first order. Richard.
I will steal your home field.
Richard, what are we doing?
Oh, baby.
Richard. No, 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 no.
It's the tasting menu for a week three slate that I have to admit we're never going to lie to our audience. On
sucks.
Paper, on paper is
pretty rough.
Is not like last week on paper was wonderful. And sometimes it it's works out that the game that the days that on paper don't look great are the best.
Listen,
days,
man. But listen, man.
That hasn't happened
you
yet.
You can eat the whole hog. You don't have to say it all tastes good.
That should be our motto for this program. Thank you. Thursday, no. All times are gods. That's Central. Thursday, 6:30 ESPN, Navy and Memphis. Intrigued by this one. I would hope to see Memphis destroy this team, not because I'm anti-troops, of course, but because if Memphis is actually getting it together, you will win this game. You will not get triple optioned in this game. You will win comfortably.
I am. So Memphis is a 14.5-ish, 15-ish point favorite in this game. And this is like the friends in the desert have to be like yelling about something here that I personally am missing, because I think this Navy team is bad.
By the way,
I would completely agree here. This is, let's just go ahead and mash these two together. Friday, 6 p.m. on 6 p.m. Central on ESPN. Army at UTSA. Last week I was on the road, although not technically for work. I was at the Army Delaware State game. I watched every snap with a 9-year-old. I watched every snap of that game.
He stayed the whole game.
Oh, he was insistent. Oh, we got to do the fight songs and the whole man. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Oh yeah, here's the deal. This is going to be a transition year for everybody not named Air Force in the academies. I am shocked at this line as well, because I think Navy gutted it out against Wagner last week. Okay. This is going to be bad. This is going to be transition oriented.
By the way, that was after a week off. Navy had a week off
because they went to Ireland. Yeah. Yeah. Guys, this is going to be an ongoing experiment that I'm a weirdo. So I'm going to check in on these guys every week on, is Jeff Munkin right about the story that Richard wrote? Like, do you have to move away from the triple, or can you run a functional triple like Navy's doing because of rules? Or is it actually because, like, hey, Munkin's eyeing jobs, or is it because there's only so much personnel that can go around for a competitive academy team? There's a lot of questions here. I watched an Army team, by the way, Delaware State, the smallest Division I program I've ever seen in terms of like size on the field. It was crazy. It was just so weird to see him warming up. It looked like a junior high team in Florida. I'm not kidding. This is probably going to be a rough week for both of the service academies. Alex, are you ready to maybe pull it back a little bit on Silverfield?
Maybe. I mean, it does help them that they scheduled Arkansas State, Navy, and was it Bethune-Cookman? I forget who they played week one. Anyway, the schedule has fallen nicely for a coach who needs to win in order to demonstrate that he should stay on the job. It's been the kind of schedule you want to start your season.
Richard, I don't know what Army's doing offensively. And I'm not saying that critically. I'm just saying like there's ideas in place. And then sometimes I would see them get into especially like third and short situations and go right back to the way it was.
Well, yeah.
And so I would be
if it's third and 1.5, baby. Come on now, we got something. There for was that. We had something for that.
And I talked to a lot of people at West Point who were big time concerned after the ULM loss on things just not functioning in week one. Which college football doesn't have a preseason; it's a new system, it's a service academy. I tried to explain all that to them. I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by watching these two teams try and. I mean, they're basically betting against each other before they play each other in the most important game of each of their seasons. So I don't think either one is going to be successful this week. Shout out to Army captain. He was Mr. Football in Tennessee. His name's Austin Hill. He's a team captain at Army. I met his mom and his grandfather in the airport on the way home. The nicest family in the world. That's all I got on service academies.
Also Friday, 6 FS1, UVA visits Maryland. Old ACC game. Could be a future ACC game once the Super League happens and we don't get invited with the rest of the Big Ten and UVA doesn't either. we could boomerang back and play each other more frequently again. Truth be told, UVA is the closest thing to a historic football rival that Maryland has. And so I'm kind of into this. Like, Maryland is...
Do they care?
Yes. Yes. I mean, UVA fans who are listening to this might say no. But I think they care.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around.
Virginia Tech. That's the thing. I mean, Maryland is nobody's biggest rival in football.
Really?
And
I'm not being a dick. No, I know.
He's doing the Duke basketball thing.
No, and here's the thing. And basketball-wise, it's the same thing where Maryland is nobody's biggest rival. There was a legitimate Maryland-Duke rivalry in basketball. Duke did care about that series, but not as much as North Carolina, obviously. Not as much probably even as NC State. Probably not even as much as when they would get together with Kentucky. So that's Maryland is rival-ish-less, and so I'm looking forward to them playing. Okay. Maryland should win this game because the UVA situation is not good.
They are an early contender for worst team in the Power Five.
I'm a little incredulous just because on the Patreon single wing, I went through a whole, like, a listener was trying to build out a scheduling identity for West Virginia, and West Virginia fans seem very insistent on getting Maryland on the schedules for rivalry.
Pitt is West Virginia's biggest rival. We'll get to that game.
Maryland, UVA sucks. Please don't ask me if they're going to hot seat, because I just think, like, it's just a super sad situation. Like, Virginia sucks.
On Saturday,
they're stuck forever, but they're not good right now.
11 a.m. Central window on Saturday. Big Ten Network has Louisville, Indiana.
Curious if that defense is pretty good, man.
Curious.
Yeah.
Curious. I'm interested.
We haven't talked about Jeff Brohm offense yet. Like, Indiana's defense, I don't know.
Not a terrible matchup. No, not in the slightest.
NFL Stadium. It's in Indy.
What?
Yes.
I mean, it makes sense regionally because Louisville's really close, but Jesus, what?
And this week, Indiana bought Louisville out for next year.
Oh, wow. Huh.
To play an FCS team, probably, I believe was the report.
Yes, out of Indiana. They are quadrupling down on not playing, like, just having a more winnable schedule. Yeah. And honestly, like, I was mean about that for a second, but, like, it does make sense.
ESPN in this window, LSU at Mississippi State. Look, I don't think LSU is going to lose the game. I don't. They're like 9.5, 10-point favorites. They have infinitely more offensive firepower. But I don't know. I'm wondering. I think that Mississippi State might look a little better than they are because Jaden Delora gave them the ball four times last week, and they beat what might be a
weird game, man.
Arizona
that was a weird game.
But remember, let's see some improvement.
Mississippi State is not really trying to run the air raid stuff back that much. So, you know, kind of understand that's what you're going to see when you watch Mississippi State.
Makes good sense. SEC Network in this slot. Kansas State, Missouri. In general, like I said, I think this might be the best game of the window. And that's not great in terms of, like, if you're just a generic college football fan and your team's not playing in this time slot and you're looking for what to watch. But let's see what K-State looks like against, you know, this is still the defending Big 12 champ, against power competition after they played an FCS team and after they played a clearly reshuffling, not quite as good as they were, Troy.
We have missed one on this, by the way. Penn State, Illinois.
Oh, I did this miss that. Excuse me. Yes.
Yeah. This is Penn State, game. Illinois. This
Pittsburgh
is a
bias.
This is a rubber meets the road on what this Illinois team is, particularly defensively. It's rubber's going to meet the road here. Already some, I don't know if dissent's the right word, but some murmurings about what they aren't on defense. So,
yeah, and this is not going to be
here. I think Drew Allen
is not going to be okay. But this is not going to be enough of a platform for us to start really looking at Penn State. Not yet.
Take care of business.
Yeah, take care of business. Take care of business.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a take care of business game. I'm saying, like, they won't be front and center on the narrative yet just by virtue of, I think everybody's aware of what Illinois isn't right now.
Accurate. I would agree with that. 2:30 Central Time window, ESPN has Minnesota, North Carolina. These teams have never played in football. That's cool.
This is a weird,
it's a weird one. Yeah, it's a weird,
weird
one.
Is this a home and home?
It is a home and home. They were going to play a home and home 10 years ago.
Why did North Carolina do that?
They were going to do this 10 years ago. The series wound up getting bought out or canceled by somebody. And they signed this deal back in 2018 to play this series now. So I like it. It's a stylistic clash. It's everything. It's very much a stylistic of play clash. It's a clash of uniform colors. It's a clash of regions of the country. I think I'm in on this kind of game. I'm happy that it's happening.
How bad do you want to listen to that pregame midfield conversation between those two?
Oh my God. Wow.
Can you imagine the isms between those two cats? My word.
Dude, if Minnesota loses this game, I think you need to have a lot of police presence when Mac grabs PJ like around the neck after the game lecture him and like starts like spitting in his ear. Like, cause I don't know, like, or cause PJ could get prickly when that happens, maybe inadvertently.
Why does he do that fucking Goodwill Hunting, it's not your fault hug every time he beats somebody?
For the uninitiated, this is a thing where Mac does the like grandfather, like not just like the shake, because like you'll see
it's
some
aggressive,
like, you know, the like classic, like when the Patriots lose and Belichick like barely touches your hand on the way by, like Mac Brown does the like polar opposite of that, where he will do the like grab maybe up the shoulder, or even I think he like grabs Shane Beamer like by the back
he's
of the neck.
Starting the it's the start of an arm bar. It's the start of an arm bar. Like he's gonna turn it into an Irish whip and then get a good spot off of it. It's so weird.
It's odd. Anyway, it's a quarterback mismatch. Minnesota anyway, is trying to rev it up with Ethan Kaliakmanis at quarterback. Drake May has already revved it up. I think UNC is going to score more points than Minnesota. FS1, San Diego State, Oregon State. This is the mid-afternoon still. Any vision of another 10-win Oregon State team in this last year of the Pac-12 has to include winning this game.
Well, have you seen San Diego State lately?
Well, it does seem like a lot. Here's the thing. Yes.
Depreciating asset.
Yes. I think, yes. There was a lot of excitement about San Diego State as recently as like 2 months ago. Some of it tied to the on-field, but most of it tied to the off-field. We could call this like the bowl of the teams who most got screwed by the Pac-12 disbanding. That's what this is.
Dude, Chip lined up in every football formation from like before the polio vaccine and beat on their ass last week. Oregon State is going to enjoy this game.
We did.
They are built for this.
We did a Patreon show about Chip Kelly's schematic evolution about a month ago, me and Godfrey did. Them boys were out there in the T formation.
Woo, boy.
The T formation that, as you will note, was invented in January 2023 by the Jacksonville Jaguars in order to complete a 24-point comeback against the Los Angeles Chargers at Everbank Field to win a playoff game. Go Jags.
CBS mid-afternoon
big
game
one on Sunday. Big one on Sunday. Dude, they play the Chiefs. It's as hype. Yeah, it's on CBS. It's as hype as I've been for a regular season game, besides maybe 2018 Patriots.
Are you talking about Jaguars?
Of course.
Okay. Stop making fetch
the
happen.
Day before that, Richard, on CBS, we have a matchup between South Carolina's offensive line and Georgia's defensive front.
I'm willing to entertain.
Are we selling this as a four-hour experience?
No, hold on. South Carolina in the game against North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
They did flip some tackles. I am not telling you that they figured it out in that game. That is not what I am saying. I'm saying they were trying some stuff up front, flip tackles by the end of it, yada, yada, yada. All right. Let's see what we're talking about. For Georgia's perspective on offense, let's see what we're talking about here. There has already been some consternation with Georgia and the play caller for Georgia and how the offense has been running. Should probably expect Mekhi Mews to go insane here because he's an insane player. But let's see it.
2012 Bama. All want to watch that movie again.
I am worried for Spencer Rattler's safety in this game. He's going to have to get the ball out very, 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 very fast. Dow Loggins, figure out quick ball out of the hands. Also, remember, the SEC still has games on CBS this year. A little funny how it works out because the Big Ten's deal with them started this year, but the SEC's with CBS doesn't end until the end of the season. So CBS is going to have an SEC game, I think, every week the rest of the way. And there's
going to be the stacked. SEC game.
Yep, and there's going to be stacked with Big Ten games. Good college football season for the folks at Paramount. Congrats to them on all of their acquisitions. ESPN Plus, ECU app. ECU is following Mac Brown's advice immediately. Mac Brown said, hey, we don't want to play app anymore, but we really encourage NC State and East Carolina to do that. That game is happening in Boone, a wonderful college football atmosphere. That's going to be at Kid Brewer Stadium this weekend. A pretty decent set of teams. I'm curious to see if app can build on what was an encouraging, although ultimately disappointing, game against UNC. I don't think app really does moral victories when they scare but don't
no,
beat
they don't.
P5. What can you build on if you are app and you are, I mean, that's going to be a pretty full stadium. Going to be, you know, a nice mix of probably some purple in there with the black and gold. And I just think it's going to be a good afternoon game to keep on a screen if you are interested.
There's a strong, be careful how I phrase this. There's a high level of expectation for this app team and the reformatted coaching staff to sort of return to apps of previous. And this is a game that the apps of previous years expect to win. Although ECU, like Mike Houston, very quietly rebuilt that. They're not an American program that gets any attention anymore for whatever reason, but he's very quietly turned them back into a functional program.
Yes. He's done a nice job there. I think that this is important for both teams for recruiting. We last talked about this when ECU was really struggling a few years ago, but I think especially for ECU, figuring out how to define yourselves in a very crowded G5 football landscape in the Carolinas had been a challenge. And I think they've done this a little better the last few years as Mike Houston has sort of built them in his image, the way that he built James Madison before that, you know, physical football team, right? We're going to recruit at a level where we get some players who are just outside the Power Five caliber, and we're going to get them in there and we're going to move you around a little bit, and mix in some good skill position players. And that's sort of worked for them the last few years, but it's different than App's value proposition, which is A, a lot of history, B, come up to Boone, be in the mountains with us, it's a player led program. It's different than come to the beach at Coastal Carolina. It's different than, hey, come be in the city with us at Charlotte, which obviously hasn't borne fruit yet. So it's just, it's an interesting game. And I think it does a lot of good for ECU if they could come in and pull off what I would classify, though I don't know what the spread would say, as a slight upset in Boone this weekend. Richard, ABC, Alabama at USF.
2-for-1, baby.
Yeah, Mike Oresko, the AAC commissioner, was big about this a couple of years ago. You know, if you're going to skip, we don't want to do 1-for-1 home and homes. We want to do 2-for-1s, which is 2 at your place, 1 at our place. I think for Alabama, this kind of makes sense because it's in an NFL stadium. And if you are the program that is telling you, we will get you on the NFL stage, quite literally, we will get you on the NFL stage. And it's
he'll take a game in Tampa, too.
So, yeah, it's... Yeah.
Yeah, he'll take a game in Tampa. It's Florida recruiting. Like it makes sense. It's also, it's a cheaper trip than the it's an inflated ticket price when you do the like kickoff classic stuff, like the Chick-fil-A game. This will be cheaper because a USF home game is not priced that way, and a ton of Alabama fans can go on that. And the Gulf Coast is littered with Alabama bandwagon, and so yeah, it makes sense. It looks funny to us because the programs are so lopsided, but from a business standpoint, it makes sense.
3 p.m.
It's also cheap
on Fox. I gotta say, I have a little bit of interest in Western Kentucky, Ohio State.
Alex, this I have to pick a game every week, like a hipster. It's basically a tasting menu for the Washington Post, but I have to pick a game every week to be like, hey, you should pay attention to this, even though something bigger is going on. A little hard to do this week because nothing big is going on. I picked this game. I picked Western Kentucky and Ohio State because like Western Kentucky consistently entertaining and effective offense here. Question marks abound for, I would say, more for Ohio State than Notre Dame going into next week. We're not in a look ahead spot. I'm not picking an upset. I don't think anything dramatic is going to happen here, but this is the best data point we're going to get on Ohio State in advance of that game because they haven't really played anybody.
There's a reality where I think you believe more in Ohio State's defense than to an extent you believe in Ohio State's offense coming out of this game into Notre Dame. So I would like to see this play out in order to
definitely.
Make, make such an assertion. They have given, I understand that was an FCS team last year, or last week. Ohio State has given up 10 points this season. All right. I'm not telling you they're the 85 Bears. I am telling you, I'm curious about how that defense holds up against Western Kentucky.
Which is why I picked this game, because Western is going to move the ball effectively in against everybody else. What if if they keep them under 14, that's really impressive.
Yes, exactly. I think that if Western Kentucky comes out of this with a really small point total, that should raise your eyebrows at how good Ohio State's defense is, because that's one of the better offenses in college football, period. I understand they're a CSA team.
We're not going to know about the other side of the ball for Ohio State. It's not going to happen.
We might.
Going into Notre Dame. Sure. I'm saying. Yeah. Okay. Right. You're not going to say like. Also, what like the naming of the starter who's already been your starter? It's interesting.
Peacock. I'm sure NBC is thrilled with this. Washington at Michigan State. Washington should destroy them in this game, having nothing to do with the turmoil at Michigan State. So that's going to be something for the Peacock crew to talk about in this game, is that Michigan State is kind of falling apart for reasons of Mel Tucker. And Washington is not a good team to have on the schedule as that's happening.
The Mel Tucker stuff actually creates the reason this then becomes a minority coordinator to watch game this week. Again, minority coordinator of the week in an interesting schematic spot is not an achievement award. It's not a pretender or a predictor of success. It's just taking a minority coach in an interesting schematic spot and saying, it's kind of interesting. Second week in a row that things are more kind of on the administrative end. Last week, we talked about Mike Hart taking over the second half. Sherrone Moore will get the whole game against Bowling Green as head coach, in air quotes, for Michigan, which I think is a cool thing that Jim Harbaugh is doing. We go to the other side of the state here when we talk about
Jim.
You know, so Harlan Barnett is the interim head coach of Michigan State for, you know, probably the rest of the season, considering, you know, which we talked a lot about on the, or Godfrey, I should say, talked a lot about on the Patreon, on a single wing version that went on to the Patreon. As far as the football is concerned, this is another, like, maybe Vegas is trying to tell me something, because this line's 16-17-ish for Washington, and Washington should vaporize this team.
As much as I want to say that, like, a Washington-Boise State game is marquee, I know that a lot of people in the South and the Northeast, they're just not going to pay attention to it. This is Washington's best platform thus far to show you how good and fun that offense is. I expect them to take advantage of that, even though, as Alex pointed out. So, Alex, just to be clear, this is on Peacock, but it's not also on NBC, is it? It's just on the
Peacock.
App?
Just Peacock. That's part of the Big Ten.
We had this conversation. Yeah, this is one of the games why I was like, well, I guess I got to get Peacock this year. So.
I will say, I bet Michigan State loves the fact that this is on Peacock.
Yeah, it's how you make all this money if you're the Big Ten.
I wasn't kidding.
Yeah.
I'm Michigan State, do not pay attention to me.
Hide it behind the paywall.
Well, what I mean?
This is going to be a feature of every Big Ten season going forward. There's a handful of football games that are going to be on Peacock, and it's going to come for everybody. So get prepared to.
Well, eventually that's going to be. Like, all jokes aside, that's going to be on Paramount too one day. Like, this is welcome to the future. ESPN Plus. This is going to happen.
We'll see what's going to happen with pay TV. I don't know. Some interesting news this week between Disney and Charter, worth reading up on. I wrote about it at Slate. 6 NFL Network, James Madison, Troy.
Charter scared to compete. Charter got through 1 week of professional football.
Charter made the deal.
Do you think my guys were like, if they knew that Rodgers was going to go down, they'd have been like, hold.
Richard, they didn't even get through 1 week. They made the deal the afternoon, the morning before the first Monday Night Football game, which speaks to something, by the way, and Disney does this. They are good at this. They make their deals, especially, I think the channels usually come up at once, but they make deals come up at times when you do not want to be without television. Deals come up at the beginning of football season. Remember, there was this ACC Network Comcast dispute a year or two ago, timed right for the beginning of football season. They do this because they understand, what do people want to watch in this country? Football on ESPN operated channels.
This entire culture now, and I'm not mad at what we're talking about, but like just thinking about our show today, working in the media of college football, it's like a horror film where you're trying to keep the off season out of the house 4 months a year and you can't do it. It's busting through the windows. It's coming up through the air vent. Like, we can't get away from all this off season shit all the time. We're in the middle of a rundown for week three, and Alex correctly identified a very key trend here because we just can't escape it. And that's sad.
Well,
also these games suck.
At six on the NFL Network. Actually, this is another good microcosm we're talking about. You got a really good G5 NFL game Network that for some reason is on the NFL Network. James Madison and Troy won't be the Sun Belt Championship because JMU is not eligible, but might be the best game in the Sun Belt.
NCAA makes sense.
We don't know.
I think you guys are hanging on to a version of Troy that might not exist.
I agree. It might not. That's why I said might.
He wrote that, not me.
No, it's possible that Troy just doesn't have the defense right now. Best player in maybe program history is no longer there on that defense. So let's see. Six, ESPN. Richard, tell me about Tennessee, Florida in the swamp.
Boy, howdy. Florida, I think. So this is a particular litmus test for Florida, which is, in the last 2 weeks, have you shorn up the administrative stuff and the functional stuff that was part of the reason why you lost to Utah? Because if you were not on P's and Q's with getting lined up, getting the right personnel in the game, not false starting, not committing bad penalties on third and down that give the offense more plays, this Tennessee team is going to beat you like you stole something, because that's they are built to do. Again, we talk about the Tennessee team. There are some sort of check boxes you have to check off in order to play eye to eye with Tennessee, in order to be on the same level of Tennessee. Obviously, Florida has the requisite amount of talent to play eye to eye with Tennessee. But if Florida does not have the requisite amount of administration to play with Tennessee, that can get ugly.
When you explain administration, we're not talking about ADs.
I'm talking about not having two players with the same jersey on the field at the same time.
Having 11 guys on offense, the field.
Giving the offense a new series of downs in which they then score a touchdown. I mean, correctly defending the first play of the season that goes for a 70-yard touchdown.
Your secondary might want to pay attention just in general this week.
So on the flip side, this is the is Joe Milton a complete quarterback game. This is that. This is a defense that I think up front for Florida I think is pretty good. I think has some reasons for optimism. I also think, frankly, I think Florida's receiving core and Florida's pass catchers are a lot better than they were last year. I think there are some reasons for optimism there. I think, you know, it seems like Graham Mertz has been efficient, whatever. Obviously, it was an FCS team last week.
A Wisconsin quarterback?
Yes. Let's see it.
You said, I think Graham Mertz has been efficient, which is literally the way you describe 30 fucking years of Wisconsin quarterbacks. he's good. He's a Volvo. Like, you know, you get the certified used warranty.
I don't know if that's fair to Volvo. A lot of people would love to have a Volvo.
I didn't mean to be this mean to be. All right. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, Grammar.
I didn't mean to either. But I mean, the Volvo it's an aspirational vehicle for a lot of people, Stephen. 6:30 on ABC.
Jesus, Alex.
The Backyard Brawl. This one has become an anxiety bowl. 100%.
Whoa.
100%.
What?
100%.
One, you stole my bit. And two, this is an anxiety bowl for Pitt?
He's definitely wishing this one.
No. And to be clear, I don't mean...
Oh, is he doing the reverse jinx bullshit again?
No.
Ever the Yinzer conspiracy.
Pat is not in any danger whatsoever of being fired. And if that's a requirement for the anxiety bowl, then okay, it's not. But have you noticed the mood of Pitt fans? Well, why would you have noticed it? Okay.
Yeah, have you noticed the offensive Pitt? You noticed the offensive Pitt?
this is a despondent Pitt fan base right now over the last few days because of the way that they lost the Cincinnati game with the quarterback completing like 10 shit. Out of 32. With worries, which I share and articulated on the show about Pat Narduzzi's apparent lack of interest in running an offense that is good. So I think Pitt fans are very down at the moment. They will be up if they win this game. West Virginia's circumstance, we know. There's actually a little smidgen of an opportunity for Neil Brown here. Like, win this game, beat Dana Holgorsen in a few weeks. Godfrey, we've already talked about the administrative background at WVU right now, where if you get people a little excited and you don't embarrass yourself, maybe you could buy another year in this job.
The bar is lower than I think people realize.
If Pitt comes in here and smashes them, that's not going to be good. In fact, I would say that if he loses this game, it is you have to do some gymnastics to figure out how he doesn't get fired. It could happen, but I feel like this is a you probably ought to win this game thing for Neil Brown.
Slightly related, I want to read a tweet, which is never a great way to start a conversation. Our friends at Smoking Musket hit me up out of the total blue on Monday and said, important question. West Virginia Houston is the funniest anxiety bowl of all time next month, right? And I didn't understand what he was saying. He follows up and he says, Neil Brown getting fired after losing to the guy he replaced, who was also on the hot seat because he just lost to West Virginia's quarterback from last year. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Yep. I don't know if it's necessarily going to happen.
That is a Thursday night game that will be great to have on the TV on October 12th.
Are we in a situation where it's like, okay, Mark Whipple was right? Like,
I mean,
it's crazy to me, Steelers, current state of the Steelers aside, that like Kenny Pickett came from this. Like, we do this bit with Wyoming and Josh Allen all the time, but like Kenny Pickett came from this.
Look, I get into arguments with Pitt fans about this, even though I think most of them agree. So it's not like I'm getting like ratioed into the sun when I talk about this. Pat Narduzzi in 2021 had an amazing Pitt offense run by Mark Whipple. I do not believe that the two of them got along based on some public information that is extremely obviously out there and just my understanding of talking to people around Pitt. They did not get along personally. And it wasn't, and by the way, you probably could have read those tea leaves yourselves when Mark Whipple rolled out of Pitt to go to late stage Scott Frost, Nebraska before a New Year's Six bowl game. So
he took a hospice job.
Like, I think that there is something to it, that Pat wants to play offense in a way that makes him feel safe and makes him feel secure. And to prove that, he went and hired a Boston College offensive coordinator, Frank Signetti, who has been terrible. And this year followed it up with a Boston College quarterback. Now, Pitt fans will say, how's the offense changed? Like, the offense has changed in the simplest way, that I think what Kenny Pickett did made Pat really nervous. Kenny Pickett, Richard Wright, took like a year to throw the ball his last year at Pitt. Like, he was playing backyard football. He was a pretty athletic guy, by the way. I mean, you saw him run against Wake Forest in the ACC championship. Kenny would freelance. Kenny would play out of structure. Kenny would take a long time and be kind of a Brett Favre gunslinger style of player at Pitt. And I think that Pat
took them to a New Year's Six bowl.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that
one football games.
Something in Pat's soul was hurt when Mark Whipple chose to have Kenny Pickett do that instead of man ball. Maybe it's the, he didn't think he could, you know, he didn't think he could find another quarterback like Pickett. Keaton Slovis certainly wasn't. Dracovic certainly isn't. But like, he also found there aren't that many college quarterbacks right now who can't move. And Pitt has found two in a row. Guys who just can't move. They're not athletes. They are athletes, but they're not even a number in the run game. And I just think that Pat didn't like, well, I'm going on too long about the Pitt offense, but I think Pat did not like the way that Pitt achieved those results.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted
emails.
I think that he wanted to make a point more than he wanted to score a point.
Much like the aspects of the Pittsburgh cuisine, I think Narduzzi just looks at, you know, when you get that random piece of lettuce that's just dressing on the plate and you're like, why the fuck they bring that? I'm not going to eat that. That's basically how he views offense. Superfluous, annoying, potentially nutritious. We don't want any of that. All joking aside, Richard, defensive-minded head coaches, I mean, I'm not going to make a Kirby Smart joke. Most defensive-minded head coaches that are successful at the high P5 level have come around and realized that you can't man ball. right? Like there's a giant effigy of William Muschamp, and the modern defensive head coach realizes, like, we do have to, as Alex alluded to, like, take risks or have freelancing moments or rely on quarterback athleticism, except this one dude. And what's truly, like, stupefying about this is he then has a quarterback who goes through, who gets drafted and is starting in the NFL now, who shows him how good the program can be when you actually invest in a functional offense and not approach everything in such a reductive manner. And then he goes right back, as Alex says, to one of the, like, most reductive and almost like myopic, like, offensive decisions that he could make.
I also think
Pitt fans defend this? Are they defending him?
Not really.
Look,
no, okay. Not really.
Not to belabor the point here, because I think I mentioned this in the ACC preview, like, or a couple weeks ago. Like, look, man, it's been competent. It's been really competent. You can bitch about it.
They're not going to fire him, and they shouldn't fire him. Right. I'm not saying that. But, I'm saying that it's disappointing the way that he runs his offense.
But I think there is something to be said for the fact that there are some people who think the pendulum on this is swinging back towards potentially being able to do that, potentially being able to get that done. We will have that dialogue about Notre Dame next week.
Get what done?
Manball.
Winning with manball. Or getting back to something a little bit more manball adjacent.
We need to work on that on a future show because it's a big topic, Richard. But, like,
I mean, it is, but like
smart man ball. Yes.
Georgia's
yes.
won two national championships. I understand they did it with, you know, like, not 10 even, NFL players, like, but, like,
I love to get jokes in about Georgia's offense. And you've corrected me on this. I'm not comparing a more simple minded Georgia offense or conservative Georgia offense with what the fuck Pitt is trotting out right now.
Sure.
Because there's man ball and then there's just dumb. And that's the area that we're approaching.
7, Fox, TCU, and Houston. Also a little angsty here. Houston for obvious reasons. Houston losing to Rice last week was, well, hey, Godfrey, I mean, you know rich Houston people. You've reported on them. How, like, God. Is this a DEFCON 1?
Not yet.
Dude, they just lost to Rice.
They just lost to Rice, Stephen. Rice plays in the city of Houston, actually. They're local opponents.
No, losing to TCU is not the DEFCON.
Losing to Rice. And then losing another game. I'm just asking.
Man, patreon.com/SCD. Aren't you my business partner? Like, just give it a minute. Give it a minute. Okay. Give it a minute. I know it's bad. I'm not saying it's not bad. I'm not caping for Dana at all, because Dana has matched the energy of Tillman Fertitta in so many ways, where he just comes out publicly and says whatever the fuck he wants, which is very similar to Tillman. And Dana has said many times, I've got a buyout. If you'd like to pay it, pay it.
There will be more.
I don't think anybody expected a loss to Rice, though.
There will be more on the Patreon this week about Houston. 9 o'clock, ESPN, Colorado State, Colorado. It's a Deion Sanders media bonanza in college football right now.
Fuck off.
Like, we could all be getting boats if Deion keeps winning.
How is this benefiting? Like,
it's not,
Hang on. I want to walk this out because I sure as shit I'm not going to talk about this game because it's going to be a rout. Do you think people are coming in off the street into college football because of Deion? And then question number two,
I don't know.
Do you think they're, like, going to stay and somehow
no.
like,
no.
The answer okay, to question
one, how are we buying a boat?
Hold on. The answer to question one is unequivocally yes, by the way.
No, but my point was question two. He's drawing in new eyes, no doubt. Like, did you see the ratings? They were percentage point off of Texas, Alabama for a fucking game against Nebraska. I know that. I'm not going to argue with metrics. All right. I'm saying as soon as this goes in, it will recede. These people are not going to stick around and be like, yeah, for some reason, Deion Sanders is the reason I discovered college football. Oh, shit. Wake Forest. That's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Right. I don't think anybody's.
Nobody thinks that. And yeah. when he.
But you said
Colorado,
we're all going to buy boats off this. Like, well, we can't capital. Blip in the market.
What I'm saying.
He was saying. Year, Alex's point was if they were, like, very good. He was saying if they keep winning.
College football has found another premium TV team this year because Deion is the coach of Colorado. Obviously, when Deion leaves that job, he is going to take all of this with him. I do not anticipate that it will be a long-term durable thing for Colorado, but also Folsom Field looked pretty sweet last week. It's going to look pretty sweet this week with the two pregame shows. I don't want.
Where's he going?
I mean, Big Noon is not nearly the product that Game Day is, but like, I, you know, there will still be people.
Richard,
there.
Do you think a dynamic black coach would ever leave Colorado for Michigan State?
Can't imagine it. He's Deion is not going to Michigan State. I know that's not what you're saying.
He's not going anywhere colder than Boulder. He's not going anywhere colder. We're gonna head south. Look out, Lane.